Alongside Joe Giglio, I'm Joe Ovias. Carolina Hurricanes blew it on Sunday. Fell back into their bad habits at the worst possible time. F1's taken over the U.S. Plus, we seem to have properly trolled Boston Sports Talk Radio. Sports Radio Open is back, presented by the Jim Allen Group. Benefits the Helene Foundation. You can join us Friday, May 20th at Riverwood Golf and Athletic Club in Clayton. Secure your tee time now at WRLSportsFan.com/sportsradio. Breakfast is provided by our friends Duncan and Baskin-Robbins on Six Forks. Lunch, courtesy of City Barbecue. Got that 50-50 putt-off, sponsored by Miracle Movers. Sports Radio Open from 99.9 The Fan. Let's log on to the internet, shall we? It's brought to you by Geico. Any number of ways that you can save on car insurance. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Go online to geico.com or stop by the Geico office nearest you. Let's get it.
Number five.
The leaders of the ACC are meeting in Amelia Island. And one of the topics, Joe, divisionless football. Dun, 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 dun.
Better late than never.
Absolutely better late than never. And it could solve. They could kill a couple birds with one stone by getting rid of their divisions and going to a rotating schedule format. A couple different ways you can make this work. You can have three permanent partners and then have five teams you play on an every other year basis. So you'd play basically a home and home with five teams and move through it. That would allow you, Joe, instead of playing NC State playing Duke in 2013 and not again until 2020.
Ridiculous.
It would allow you to not only play teams every other year, it would allow you in your college career to play in every ACC stadium, every player.
Where have I heard this before as it relates to where have I heard this before as it relates to this particular
for my
rotating schedule?
For my birthday in 2014, I made this proposal to the ACC in 2014. So really before the rise of Clemson.
Yeah.
And at the time, I was told the problem with getting rid of the divisions was they didn't want Clemson and Florida State playing twice every year.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you see what had happened was they invited Notre Dame in a one-off pandemic year.
Uh-huh.
Notre Dame and Clemson, not only did they play twice, but they both made the college football playoff.
Weird.
So, the thought process has changed, obviously, since then. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Florida State, not in the same position of power that they were in 2014. But my idea will still work. That was three permanent partners, five rotation. You would end up playing home and home with those five teams. Move them out, play the other five teams home and home.
Mm-hmm.
And in a four-year span, you would play not only every team, but you'd play in the stadium of every team in the ACC.
What I love about planning in the ACC in relation to schedules has been, we can't do this because of hypotheticals that never actually panned out.
That is a problem for the ACC, yes.
The ACC loves to come up with all sorts of hypothetical situations. And we can't do this because of X. You know, Florida State and Miami have to be in separate divisions, so that way they can have a championship game. We'll do it in Florida.
Now, in fairness to the ACC, I will say this.
Mm-hmm.
You had two things happening. On the Atlantic side, you had the legitimate concern that, remember, the Power Five conferences sat down and said, okay, guys, we're going to create a playoff where every year at least one of us is going to be left out.
Yeah, and the mistake was thinking that
it
would only be one. That was the first mistake.
But so I could see the thought process of saying the ACC made the playoff every year.
Yeah.
Until last year. The ACC had their champion in the playoff every year.
Mm-hmm.
So they weren't going to change anything or jeopardize anything that would alter their admittance into the playoff.
Until it was proven.
Until the Notre Dame example came along and showed them, wait a second.
That's the thing.
We could get more?
Well, this is where the SEC understood. Have a little pride in what you do. If your teams are so good, then the meeting of the teams,
then those certain losses won't matter.
Will not matter. But again, best laid plans. Hopefully this actually ends up happening. And
this is possible, I believe, because was it the Pac-12?
Yeah, the Pac-12 has started the...
Made the actual proposal to the NCAA to eliminate the need for divisions in order to play a conference championship game. But that's
ACC,
where all this came from.
The ACC's already tried that before. This is not the first time.
Not formally.
This is not the first time that this has come about, and the ACC was one of the first movers to try to get rid of divisions. It's at the time, there was pushback on the idea, so the ACC never really brought it forward.
Yeah.
Of course, the college football
playoff
changed.
It was more of a formality
changed.
Than a pushback.
Then you got the college football playoff changing the mathematics, and also the alliance also changing the mathematics a little bit because the SEC and the Big Ten have just run away with everything, so now conferences
yep.
have to do what they can to better their product.
And it wasn't just getting the two teams in the playoff. Now, that helped. But the pandemic season, Joe, we had no filler.
Yeah.
Remember?
That's
that, I think the television product was so much better that year, even without fans.
Yes.
Because each week, it wasn't this, oh, now NC State's going to go play Murray State.
But again, this is not something
that Western Carolina for a month, and we're not going to see them play a meaningful football game. No, it was every week was a league game.
But this is not something that should have been the light bulb going on in 2020. For years, we've made arguments that why do Virginia Tech and Clemson not play each other more often than not?
Oh, it took forever.
Two prime television teams, why don't they play more? So, again, it gets back to my very pointed criticism of the ACC. They get so wrapped up in hypotheticals about what XY could mean rather than just putting the best product out there and telling schools, administrators, if you want to elevate the league, this is what you have to do, rather than being, but the unfairness of my division.
Well, that was the other part of it, Joe, because the coastal side, other than Georgia Tech,
yes.
who every year had to play Clemson, other than Georgia Tech, you weren't going to get the coastal side to say, hey, we really need to change this up because we want to play Florida State. We want to play Clemson on a regular basis. They didn't want that. The coastal side didn't want that. And if I'm remembering correctly, it takes a three-quarter vote from the league membership to change, even before the NCAA thought process. So convincing the coastal side, remember, we went 7 years with seven different teams winning.
Mm-hmm.
Why would they give that up?
Of course not. Next up.
Number four.
F1 took its show to Miami this weekend. This is something that's been in the works for quite some time. F1 continues to gain in popularity here in the United States. And the question is, why? It's a great question. I don't think we have a right answer to. We've gone from nobody in this country really giving a damn about F1 outside of a handful of people, like super hardcore fans. Shout out to my guy Brian Shaw at Nice Price, who's just into motorsports in general. He's the only person I knew before F1 suddenly got popular again here in the United States that would even mention F1. But now it seems inescapable. And it all kind of climaxed this weekend in Miami, which is then catapulting F1 into future United States dates. Miami has the first of many races over the next 10 years. They'll be in Las Vegas in 2023. The spectacle there isn't fake marinas like Miami's racetrack around Joe Robbie Stadium. It's literally driving down the strip. Think about that. And to me,
so you could have fake New York City in
you
the
could.
Background. And
you
fake
could.
Paris in the background.
Yes, absolutely. Let's go.
Let's ease up on the authenticity of Vegas now, Joe.
Hey, look. So my dad actually went to that race down in Miami. He spent $3,000, and that barely got him in the spot. I mean, I laughed hysterically. I mean, you spent $3,000? What are you doing, hanging out in the luxury suites? He's like, no, I'm just in the grandstands, and I have access to certain areas. If you really wanted to have access, you're dropping anywhere between $20,000 to $30,000 for the race weekend. It's nuts. So why is F1 gaining in popularity? Some theories. And this is coming at it from a completely 10,000-foot view, but I do think that what we're seeing with F1 is something that is foreshadowing the future of sports entertainment. The first reason why F1 has seen popularity gains is because of a Netflix show called Drive to Survive. They're on season 4 right now. Think of Drive to Survive on Netflix like Hard Knocks on HBO with one key differentiator. Whereas the NFL has the final say in what you see on Hard Knocks, F1 has zero say in what you see on Drive to Survive. So the producers of the Netflix show are showing you the juiciest bits of drama behind the scenes. You then get invested in this reality television, which then gives you a race that, like, okay, I've seen all this behind-the-scenes stuff. I'm invested with this driver. I'm invested with this team, the dynamics of these particular teams. And then I literally get to watch real reality television in the form of a race. So there's been investment in that regard. There's been an uptick. Going to ABC ESPN also matters in this particular case, too. Higher profile, more coverage on ESPN from their personalities relates to a little bit higher ratings. But in watching the race on Sunday, here's my biggest takeaway. And it's something that NASCAR needs to get the hell on. When you watch an F1 presentation, it has two things going for it that NASCAR cannot compete with. And this has to be freaking people out in NASCAR headquarters. The first one is the presentation. Imagine watching a video game with all of the stats being presented to you. Camera angles that are just unreal from the car and down the straightaways. Access within the bays, the paddock, right? There is so much being thrown at you. And the age demographic that's glomming onto this are the same people that would watch people play video games on Twitch. People who are used to seeing all these things going on at once. And when it's presented that way, it makes for very compelling television. Which then gets to the other part, the compelling television of the spectacle of what we're seeing. Some of it is inherently baked into NASCAR. You race in giant tracks. What Miami presents, what Las Vegas presents, what Texas in Austin, where they're raced, what that presents, is true spectacle. You're seeing boats on a fake marina. You're seeing celebrities walking around. There's so many celebrities there that the people giving it to you don't even know who's who. For instance, they thought it was Patrick Mahomes. Spoiler alert, ended up being Paulo Banchero. Here's what happened on the broadcast during the race parade.
This is crazy. I've never been to an F1 race. This is spectacular.
It's amazing to be allowed right in the middle of the competitors just before the race starts.
Yeah, now you can see they're locked in. It reminds me of myself. The real focus.
Okay, it's not Patrick. That's why he ignored me in the beginning. But what is your name, sir?
Paulo Banchero.
Right, okay. Well, I thought I was talking to somebody else. So I'm sorry about that. Whatever. Yeah.
So that was Paulo Banchero. But you're also seeing there's Jordan, Tom Brady, David Beckham. Like, it's just the opulence, man. And that's something NASCAR cannot compete with. There is a level of money and richness and elitism that we as consumers are somewhat compelled to watch that NASCAR cannot compete with.
I know you're on this F1 tangent right now.
Yeah.
And I respect this. I really do. Can we go back for a second? Paulo Banchero, buddy. Play the clip again, please.
Yeah, the clip is funny.
This is crazy. I've never been to an F1 race. This is spectacular.
Okay. It's amazing this to be allowed right in the middle of the competitors just before the race starts.
Yeah, now you can see they're locked in. It reminds me of myself. The real focus.
Reminds me of myself.
Real focus.
I'm sorry.
Real focus.
I'm sorry. You played in the Duke Carolina game in the Final Four, and you had one more field goal attempt than I did in the last 7 minutes of that game.
Mm-hmm.
Real focused? The money's on the table? Real focused? I mean, you can get away with that when you're acting like Patrick Mahomes at an F1 race. Don't come up in the OG with that, though. Zero field goal attempts in 7 minutes of the Final Four? You're real focused? You're locked in? And don't even start me. Oh, he's a kid. He's about to make $8 bazillion next week. Get the hell out of here.
Next.
You are real focused.
Next up.
You got to be kidding.
Number three.
I'm with you.
I want to, what's that called? Editing?
Yes.
What it should say is, reminds me of
Caleb Love.
Real focused. That's who was real focused. Not you.
I'm good at that. I can edit that.
You just put that in there.
Yeah.
Caleb Love.
That can be number one. Give me a minute.
Gosh.
Sorry, we're on number three.
But isn't that classic? The second somebody leaves, we forget about him. We literally forget about him.
Well, Paulo Banchero.
Right. But yeah, I mean, he thinks he could just say whatever he wants as if the internet doesn't remember.
Hey, man.
I mean,
short memory. Short memory. You know?
Wasn't Duke's biggest problem this year was they couldn't figure out who the heck was driving the bus? Yeah,
for instance, I'll give you an example. Short memory, right? So Friday,
I'm going to pass out.
So Friday, I attempted a dumb bit. Okay? We talked to Matt Porter, Boston Bruins beat writer for the Boston Globe. We've known Matt for a very long time. And I thought, "Oh, okay, this will be funny. I'm going to hang up on him." Because this is what you do. This is what you do in a large market radio station, right? You get the people going, right? You do some silly thing like this. So I was going to hang up on him because, man, I couldn't stand listening to a Boston accent talk about hockey, right? So it didn't work out. Whatever. I tried. Didn't work. Keep it moving. What I did not realize was that eventually it would get to Boston Sports Talk Radio. Because the very show that I was making fun of, I'd love to know which Boston transplant in this area tipped these guys off to what we tried on Friday, which admittedly did not go well. But I moved on. So this morning, I come to find out that Toucher and Rich, the very popular morning show on the Sports Hub, I mean, it crushes in the ratings, decided to spend 15 minutes talking about us, but not talking about us. Because they don't even know which freaking market we're in. So here's what I come to hear this morning on Toucher and Rich, where they played the bit from Friday that failed spectacularly.
And this one show had Matt Porter on, and we were brought up.
Oh boy.
I can see.
Okay.
So once again, this is Carolina. This is like right. The shoe's on the other foot. Now they have...
The outrageousness of me hanging up on some guy.
Yep.
Is still in their minds here 3 years later. They need to defend the city of Charlotte and the South as a whole.
All right, stop. Pause. Defend the city of Charlotte? Dude, do you know where the freaking Carolina Hurricanes play? No, you don't. You still don't know where they play. That's amazing to me. All right, continue.
So here is our own Matt Porter being subjected to these guys in Charlotte.
Subject to? All right, so they play the bit. All right, first and foremost, we know Matt. He was not subjected to us. Matt's our friend. They got no freaking clue, A, where we are, B, who Matt Porter, our Matt Porter. Clearly you don't know Matt because you would have understood he had time in the ACC covering Miami. So that was all part of the bit. All right, so they play the clip, they ha-ha-ha, and then they continue.
That was awesome.
I liked it, you, Matt.
Matt was like, you're not hanging up on me. I'm hanging up on you. Done.
I also liked that, like, the idea was a premeditated thing by me to, like, really rile everyone up.
Right, we want to go viral.
That doesn't matter at this point.
No, like, apparently. Yeah, like the whole thing was, I was like, dudes, we're going to have this really boring dude on, and I'm going to hang up on him. And you just watch. The ratings are gonna start flying. Oh, my God. How little personality do you have? I mean, it was a nothing thing. I assumed nothing would come of it.
I do like it. Matt Porter's. That was great. That was very funny by Matt Porter. It's
yeah.
Like, all right. You want to jack around? I'm going to hang up.
Yeah.
I'm done.
Okay. I'll hang up. Because what do I want? I don't want to start anything with the Toucher and Rich show. Like, I'll hang up on you.
What a long-ass winded setup, too.
I mean, I know. I feel like it's a shot at me.
Well, of course it's a shot at the show. One of us is all of us.
Well, exactly. Well, I'm taking responsibility for it because it's such a corny, preconceived bit. Like, that's how boring your show is. That, like, the idea that, like, I just hung up on, like, some guy...
That's how boring your show is. Bro, you talked about this for literally 15 minutes on your own radio show. So I flip the question back to you. How boring ass is your show that you talk about us, but you don't because you don't even freaking know what market we're in? I love it. This once again, I'm 2 for 2 now. 2 for 2 now. Big market radio boys love taking the cheese, man. They cannot help themselves. They have no business talking about us. None. Zero. Why bore your audience with what happens in freaking Raleigh? Well, I'm sorry, Charlotte. But our show was boring. Got it. Next up.
Number 2.
You really don't want to win the President's Trophy, Joe. We talked about this when the Canes were vying for it down the stretch.
Tried to tell y'all.
The Florida Panthers had 122 points this year. They were clearly the best team in the NHL. During the regular season. Because they're now down 2-1 to the Washington Capitals in their first round series. This continues a trend. Do you know the last time the President's Trophy, which is awarded to the team with the most points during the regular season, the best regular season record. Do you know the last time a team that won the President's Trophy actually won the Stanley Cup?
I do not.
2013. The end of the Blackhawks mini dynasty there.
Yeah.
13. Every year we see really good teams. And every year we see these really good teams. And Joe, now, most of them lose in the second round. I will say that.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them lose in the second round. Tampa lost in the first round. That was always your gold staple example. Lost to Columbus when it was the old 1-8 format.
Yep.
Florida can't lose to Washington, can they? Because, but we talked about this during the closing stretch. There's eight good teams in there.
Yeah.
And I think you're seeing that Rangers, Penguins. Rangers, they finished ahead of the Penguins. They're behind in that series. You look at Tampa, won this thing 2 years in a row, and you're going, oh, surely you're going to blow away the Leafs. Hasn't worked out that way. These eight teams, the separation just isn't a lot.
No, there's not, which gets us to our top story of the day.
The number one story of the day.
We're number one. We're number one.
So last week, I said what I said. Last week, I said what I said. Based on the two games I saw at home, the Carolina Hurricanes were better than the Boston Bruins. Now, did I go over the top and say Canes in two? Yeah, I did. That's the point. It wasn't meant to be taken seriously. But the Canes should win this series. I didn't expect them to sweep the Boston Bruins. I figured, I mean, if you wanted my honest opinion, I figured, you know what? Boston will probably win a game. They're good players. They're key guys. Brad Marchand, David Pastrnak, Bergeron. Those guys are too good to just go out like that. I think we all understood that. But what I did not expect from the Carolina Hurricanes, what I thought they were better than, the reason why I was confident last week after seeing two games at home before they went to Boston, the reason why I was so confident is because I thought the Canes had learned a lesson on top of bolstering their depth to be better than the Boston Bruins. I was wrong. It's one thing to lose on Friday night in Game 3. You could have buried them. I know you like to bring up the Kokkonen power play goal, and this is a big
giveaway.
Reason.
Yeah.
The giveaway. So this is a big reason why the Canes are where they are right now, is that they haven't cashed in their opportunities. But the reason why they're truly going into Game 5 with potential butt pucker happening is because Sunday, the worst version of the Canes showed up when I thought that would not be the case in this series. What I thought was the Carolina Hurricanes would not give in to what the Boston Bruins are about. Instead, they're very much still allowing the Boston Bruins to get in their head. I'm sorry, but you're better than that. Or at least I thought you were better than that. Turns out you have not matured as a group. In year four, where you're supposed to surpass the Boston Bruins, you've built to this point, you allowed them, much like Boston Sports Talk Radio, they allowed me to hijack one of their segments on their drive time show. Well, guess what? The Carolina Hurricanes allowed the Bruins to hijack this series by giving in to how they troll you. Now, there is a collective failure, okay? An absolute collective failure on behalf of the Carolina Hurricanes. There was the parade to the penalty box in the second period, and then there was the cherry on top of the crap cake that they presented on Sunday with Tony DeAngelo chucking his stick at Brad Marchand. Congratulations. You just gave Brad exactly what he's looking for. Oh, it's high-intensity playoff hockey, blah, 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 blah. That's real big I'm not owned, you're owned energy. And you all know how I feel about that. You know how I feel about that. So the Hurricanes did everything they shouldn't have. Right down to the coach, by the way. Rod Brind'Amour is a big reason why they're in this position from the jump. A lot of coaches have come through the Carolina Hurricanes organization, some flexing their hockey knowledge, only to fall flat on their face. Rod Brind'Amour, absolutely changed the culture of the Carolina Hurricanes. And the 4 years of playoff hockey has been a direct correlation to his arrival as the head coach of the Carolina Hurricanes, along with Tom Dundon and various other decisions. But ultimately, the culture that you see on the ice, they're all emulating Rod. That's a great thing. However, Rod is still human. Rod is still susceptible to making mistakes. Blah, 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 blah. I'm getting all worked up. I can't even speak straight. Rod Brind'Amour is still susceptible to making mistakes because we talk about big I'm not own energy. There's still some big NC State energy, too, when it comes to officiating. Here's where the big problem was in the second period. It's one thing for your players to parade to the penalty box by making silly decisions. Svechnikov, what you doing, dude? Trocheck, lifted the puck a little too high there, man. Then Rod decides that here I'm going to make a point with the goalie interference. Here's Rod Brind'Amour after the game talking about the goalie interference challenge that ended up failing, which resulted in another power play for the Boston Bruins.
I would have bet my life on that one. So that, you know, it's tough because it's clearly, especially the view that we saw after, it's in between his pads loose. I'm all good of that. But the guy came from the side, pushes his pad, squirts the puck out, taps it in. A little different maybe if the guy had come in for the front and was actually playing the puck. There's no – the pad. You can't play the puck when it's in between his legs from the side and knock the goalie sideways, turn it to squirt it out. If you can, then I don't know how Niederreiter's goal isn't a goal in the first game when they said 100% not a goal.
We're going to stop it right there. We're going to stop it right there. I get that it's frustrating, but these are points that you try to make in the regular season where the consequences aren't the same. This is not a tit-for-tat thing of, well, in game one it was like this, but it wasn't like this now. You can't sit there, and I get it. I saw what he was – I was reading lips on the bench, and he was sitting there, this league's a blanking joke. I get all those things. But you cost the team with the gamble in a time and place situation that it was not worth it. You're parading to the penalty box.
Sometimes you just have to take your medicine.
It's only 2-2. Yep. If you understand that your team is better than them 5-on-5, then why would you continue to put your team in another bad penalty kill spot? It didn't make sense to me, time and place, for two reasons. One, the larger point that you've got against the league. I get it. I don't disagree with Rod. But that ain't the time to make a point. And then there's the context of when you decided to gamble in that situation. Not when you constantly go to the box and you put him in there, you put him in that situation again. So, like, to your point, it's just 2-2, man. Plenty of time left. You can recover from that. How many times have we seen this team bounce back?
Oh, a lot.
How many times have we seen the team just the dam breaks? They know how to rally. So why would you let that get to you to make a larger point? I didn't like it. I just didn't like it in that situation. Sean Nahas, he is the head coach of the Courage. Challenge Cup in the books. Wake Met Soccer Park over the weekend. They beat Washington by a score of 2-1. Where does that go in the trophy case? That's already pretty full as it is for the Courage.
Yeah, hey guys. Appreciate you guys having me on. I think
for us, it's been a tremendous couple of months, you know, and to have the group sort of regroup and come together for this little run, you know, it puts it right at the top just because of so many things that have happened in the last couple of months. Mm-hmm. So, for us, it's a great achievement, and now we can just put our sights set on the regular season.
Sean Nahas joining us, head coach of the Courage, on the OG alongside Joe Giglio. I'm Joe Ovius. I mean, you went right to it. I mean, I was coming at it from a perspective of a pretty tough battle on Saturday, obviously, but yeah. I guess this also kind of, as you referenced, it also kind of ties into the tumultuous nature of how you're there as the head coach, you know, departures from the team and, you know, being under scrutiny. So from your perspective, you know, was it a matter of let's just go play soccer, for lack of a better term, let's focus on that. And that's where your focus goes and you're seeing the fruition of that.
Yeah. I think there's so many different levels to it, you know, and when everything transpired and you know, the turn, and I think it really was just getting them to enjoy it again, but also starting to believe in themselves again. Mm-hmm. I think that's been really the biggest focus for this year, is getting them to believe in themselves, trusting one another, trusting themselves again. And, you know, being able to sort of set a new foundation and a new culture and where we want to go and get back to who we were, you know, and not look at the past, but look at the future and allow them to realize what a big moment this could be for them, especially the veteran group who's been around forever, mm-hmm. and start to reestablish the identity of who NC Courage are. And, you know, I'll be really honest. We have never talked about anything that transpired last year. We've really just stepped forward, and it, you know, I think the players having time away helped. But their sights have been set on this year only. And I think in terms of the new faces, you know, I think for us, we've talked more about, a lot of people keep bringing up the people we lost. And mm-hmm. the thing I've been really talking about the last couple of, you know, weeks has been, I want to talk about the players that we have. And the ability for, and the willingness for them to want to stay throughout everything and really get this thing back on track. And for that, I couldn't be any more proud of those players.
Sean Nahas, NC Courage, joining us here on the Heister Automotive Group Hotline. That's Joe Ovius. I'm Joe Giglio. Speaking of those new players, tell us a little bit about Caroline. Am I saying her name right? Scoring a lot of goals for you. I know a lot of people like to go out to the games, and they might be used to some other names being out there, but give them some new names to learn and some new faces to really cheer on.
Yeah, I mean, Carol, and we call her Carol, but Caroline has been an amazing addition. You know, she burst onto the Brazilian national team spotlight probably in the last year, you know, alongside of her partner in crime, we like to say, in Dabinha, who's still one of the best players in the league. And you know, we've also added a lot of young faces. We've added the Emily Grays and the Diana Ordonez through the NWSL draft. We've added, you know, the Brianna Pintos, who joined us, but through, you know, off of a trade with Gotham, but was a part of our youth academy system. But we also have, you know, the players that have always been here, and Abby Ersig and the Denise O'Sullivans and the Mary Specks and, you know, Taylor Smith, Caitlin Rowland, Casey Murphy. You know, we brought Jaylene Daniels back, had Merritt Mathias. We have Carson Pickett. So we have a lot of really talented players in our program who have really been the ones that have set the mark for who we are and where we want to go, and they haven't left. You know, the bigger name national team players are left from, you know, the States, but we still have unbelievable talent. The league offers a lot of unbelievable talent on a weekly basis. So, yeah, I mean, you want to come to and see an exciting brand of football every Saturday or Sunday. That's, you know, Wake Med Soccer Park provides that.
Sean Nahas joining us here on the OG alongside Joe Giglio. I'm Joe Ovius. Courage winning the Challenge Cup on Saturday. Actually want to kind of bounce off a quote from one of your players. I think the quote is, winning a championship again, it's really addictive. I guess that's probably the best way to do it. I mean, look, Courage have the history, as we started this conversation. You just, you know, added something else to what the Courage have done since they moved here in 2017, you know, and kind of hitting that reset button and winning again. As they said, it's addictive, and you're just literally getting started on the season. So how do you build off of that, what happened on Saturday?
Yeah, I mean, look, we've been really fortunate here with the players and the success we've had. And, you know, those players have felt that. And for a couple of years, we haven't had any trophies put in our case. And I feel, you know, I'd probably say out of all the years, this was probably the moment that people may have questioned whether or not we would have a chance to win anything because mm-hmm. of the players that left. But, you know, look, the group's rallied around and they've been tremendous based on the leadership of our players. And I think once you get that taste, because a lot of our players have experienced that, a lot of the younger players haven't. And the fact that our older players now know what that's like, and now the younger players do as well, the accountability level in training raises. The aspirations to want to feel that again raises. It only improves the training dynamic. You know, the one thing we've been really stressing is improve one day, 1% of each day, so that we can continuously grow successfully individually and collectively. We don't talk about anything other than, okay, the game. And then whether we win, lose, or draw any particular game, we're always talking about how are we going to get better the next time. And that's really the way the group has gone about business. And I think we're starting to see that process come into play. So, yeah, I mean, the fact that we have success under our belt, wanting that feeling again, you know, that's only more fuel to the fire a little bit.
Well, it's getting going right now, and people can go check out the Courage at Wake Med Soccer Park. Congratulations on getting over the Washington Spirit this weekend, getting that Challenge Cup, and we will talk to you later in the summer.
I appreciate you.